Good morning. This is Andrew Rubin from Leatherneck Magazine, interviewing Lieutenant Colonel Marcus Williams, head of the JSAS, the Joint Security Academy, Southwest in Afghanistan. Colonel, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
No problem. Good to be here, Andrew.
Thank you. Colonel, can you tell us briefly, how long have you been on station, and what's the task out there at the JSAS?
Okay, JSAS has been here since October 2009. I was in Regional Command South and came over here. I've been the director of the JSAS since August of this year, 2010. And I'm sorry, and this other part of the question that sidetracked here was our basic day-to-day activities, or can you repeat that, Andrew?
No, my question is, what are you tasked? What's the role of the JSAS in the ISAF and NUCLA organization today?
Basically, our mission, our role, is we work for the Regional Command, Southwest Commanding General. We train the Afghan National Security Forces. You know, it's joint, so we train police, we train Army. We've done Border Patrol and the Civil Order Police. We train them in combat tactics, policing skills, as well as we're doing some medical courses, basically giving them the tools that they need in order to successfully take over their security and allow our transition to go home. I'm not sure. Hopefully that will clear up a little bit, but yeah, that's
go ahead.
No, I'll just say the big picture is we are trying to improve the efficiency of the Afghan security forces so they can take over. That's it in a nutshell.
Okay. Well, when they come in to you, how well trained are the ANA? Or are you starting kind of an ANA boot camp and working from there?
But first of all, we have ANA is Afghan National Army. We have Afghan Uniform Police. Those are two main customers. Currently, we are not training ANA recruits. We're training ANA NCOs as well as drivers. And we're doing a combat medic course, an EOD course for the ANA. What we do with the AUP, those are the recruits, and it varies. And the question was, when they come in, we take these recruits, and they come from Helmand and numerous provinces, and come here to us. It can be, you know, the age will vary from 17, some are as old as in their 30s, which is quite old for an Afghan. They come out of the villages. 90% illiteracy rate, really no, lived a life of really not much discipline, no manners, or just, they're coming, it's a wide variety of perspectives. When we get them, it's not that much different than what you'd say Marine Corps boot camp. Well, let me rephrase it. It's a lot different, but, you know, we shave their heads, we take their clothes from them, we put them in all one uniform. The key thing is here that there's no way we're going to make them Marines. You have to adjust your tone, your language and your body language. You just can't yell at them and they're going to do things. But then the Army will get NCOs. And some of the NCOs we get have never been through formal training on the police side, and that's getting better. On the Army side, the ANA, those guys have been through some sort of formal training, but some are NCOs. Some come to us still as privates. So it's a wide variety of what am I trying to say? You get a lot of different types of quality of individuals. Yeah, help, Andrew. I'm not sure if I answered that question right or not.
When I was there in June, the Marines were teaching the Afghan army and Afghan, the UPs, some, they're teaching the riflery and had a tremendous success ratio. I believe it was in the range of 99.92. Are you keeping up those numbers, and what are you doing differently where you teach them to shoot so well as compared to, say, the ISAF and other organizations? Hello?
Okay. Yeah, I lost about 10 seconds, but I got the question. The first one is basically our rifle, our shooting skills. What we do, first of all, what we do differently than the other training facilities throughout Afghanistan is we've added on an extra 1 to 2 weeks of our basic training for the NCO course as well as our recruit course. Include ANA. If we had ANA, we would do the same thing, ANA and AUP, which is basically, we call it our core package, meaning a Marine Corps skills package with patrolling and shooting skills. We basically take the Marine Corps philosophy of marksmanship. You know, we don't have the KD, the known distance course, all the way up to 500 meters, but we do... We start off with classes and snap-in procedures, like just like Marines. We BGO their weapons. We teach them how to proper shooting positions. We start. We only go to 100 meters, and we go to 50. We go to 25, and we do. Basically, we're just doing Marine Corps marksmanship with an AK-47, not an M16 or M4. And we do have success. We've had a few, obviously, that can't shoot, but we've worked with them, and what it boils down to is the quality of our Marines and their ability to instruct, the patience they have, and their ability to teach and lead by example. You know, that's the success is our young Marines out there every day doing this.
Colonel, when the Afghans leave your base, when they leave Leatherneck, do you have any follow-up? Are you able to try and give them a refresher on your rifle skills and on basic marksmanship, or once they leave, are they out for good?
Excellent question. What we'd like, ideally, is to train a recruit and have them come back as an NCO. Reset training or refresh training, If we could, we'd like to do it at JSAS, but quite frankly, we're just not really not big enough to handle that. And the real, also, once they get out there, and if a ANA unit or a police unit gets someone that's been trained by Marines, they don't want to give them up again because there is a difference. And we are definitely making a difference. So that really, the refresher training is... relies on our mentor teams, our police mentor teams, our border mentor teams, and army the army mentor teams, formerly ETTs, but you know our Marines out there working day in day out will do the refresher training. But that's what we'd like to take JSAS in the future, is to get rid of the fourth generation, meaning police recruits, and get more specialized, because there's going to be a large facility built in this area for the recruits, which will free up space for JSAS to become more of a, I want to say, like a division schools. We'll get more specialized in our weapon systems and just basic training, not for recruits.
Okay. How many Marines do you have working for you now, sir?
Currently, we have 42 Marines under, actually it's 45, including myself, and 45 Marines. I have my master sergeant is my staff from 2IC, Master Sergeant Pipes. We and they do a variety of jobs. We have two British UK instructors. We have, you know, besides our four corpsmen, we have two Navy corpsman instructors for the combat medic course, We have two U.S. Army medics. We're running a combat medic course. 25 interpreters. We have 6 contractors that teach our driving. And 10 Afghan police instructors and 5 Army A&A instructors. And I don't have the exact number because I haven't looked at my morning report in a few hours. So it's over 100 staff alone to train.
Okay. Do you have sufficient interpreters? Most of the young Afghans I met, your English is certainly not their major language. Are you able to get the message across to them?
Yes. The value of a good interpreter linguist is big. You learn to appreciate a good interpreter linguist when you have a bad one. We have enough. We have 25, and you have to utilize them. You know, some are better than others, obviously. Some, they're all supposed to be fluent in Dari and Pashto, but mostly if you're a native Dari speaker, your Pashto is going to be a little weak because Pashto is a much more more difficult language. But yes, the young recruits we get, keep in mind that it's about 90% illiteracy rate, which means without language because they can't read. So every class, everything is verbal. So it is absolutely critical that we have these interpreters. And yes, they we do have enough, and we actually have some good ones. So I consider myself fortunate, and without them, we really couldn't accomplish our missions. You know, hopefully, eventually, we will start educating, and we'll have some literate people in this country. I mean, there's lots of literate people, but especially in the South and some of these, in the villages, the recruits you're getting just can't read and write. And so, the answer to your question, yes, we have enough interpreters, and they are very effective. What can you do without them?
Okay. When I was there, sir, they actually had an Afghan Army unit turn up unannounced. 30-some people came in and said, we want to get into the program. Is the program still that popular, or are you still getting those kind of walk-ins?
Yes. Speaking from just what I've heard, the program is very popular. Now, I'm not going to mention the other country, but there's another, you know, they basically, they want, when I say they, I mean the police chiefs throughout the province and Helmand and Nimrus, they specifically request recruits trained by Marines because they like the fact that we are concentrating on combat skills. Which other units don't do, which other countries, other training centers do not focus or even train on combat shooting skills, combat patrolling. I'm talking mainly about police now, but they just do policing skills and don't give them the skills, you know, to survive in combat, how to shoot, how to drive, how to patrol. And that's why they want JSAS trained recruits, police officers, and ANA. It was just, you know, you're around Marines for two months. Professionalism and just being a Marine rubs off on you, and you like to think they take some of that back with them.
Okay. If you had more Marines, would you be able to do more, or are you kind of tapped out as far as the amount of ANA and the amount of training you can do in any given time?
Well, if we had more Marines, I think there's a lot of factors here. I mean, you've been to JSAS before, so if I kind of say it's, we need space is an issue for building and for building, classrooms, chow hall. But if you get too big, I use the analogy, if you get too big, it will be like the Army, the U.S. Army. It's the difference between Budweiser and a microbrew, which is better. We're small, but we produce a quality product. And we're not these cookie cutters, these large retraining centers that do 1,000 at a time. And they just shuffle them through. We have, we are primarily Marine instructors. Marine are primary instructors. The ANA, AUP are the alternate. They're assistants, unlike the other academies. Can we do that indefinitely? No. If we have more Marines, sure, we can do more. But I think the other point to that is the recruiting effort. And there's a lot of issues involved in that. Can they recruit from these areas as heavily as we have been? And that's to be determined. And there's a lot of things, administrative things. They have the approved numbers to be able to recruit towards. Have they used up all the potential warriors in the two provinces? A lot of times these young recruits are told to go by their village elders. They'll go around, hey, we need this many from your district, and they'll just point to the young men in their village, you're going to go be a police officer or a soldier. So that question is, can we, if we had more Marines, can we produce more? Absolutely, we can do anything we're tasked to do, but it just would require building more. It's actually a facilities issue. We don't have the space. Okay. As you've seen, we're pretty much tapped out now.
Okay. How long is does the program, how many Afghans do you have any given time, and how long is the program?
That, once again, varies. Currently, we have 198 students right now. We're going to get another 100 here in a week. And we'll be up to we'll be about 300 in another couple weeks. Normally, our standard course normally goes about 2 months, no matter what, 8 weeks for recruit training. Our NCO goes 8 weeks as well, and we have a explosive hazard reduction course, a modified EOD. That goes about 6 weeks. Nothing. So the longest course, our shortest course is 6, and the longest is 9. Our NCO course goes 9. I said 8, but it's actually 9 weeks. And we can always tailor that and make it shorter if necessary. We can just modify the schedule.
Okay.
So we figured 2 months is about the right time for recruit. Could we do more? Yes, but we need to get them out there.
Okay. Now, is this an intensive 8 or 9 weeks, or do they have weekends off? Are they going home with pay, or is this just kind of like boot camp, which is straight through from start to finish?
Well, it is like boot camp where they can't leave. But keep in mind the issues involved. They don't get to leave here because there's nowhere to go. Camp Leatherneck is literally in the middle of nowhere. Some of the other training sites, they can walk out the door, the gate of the training site, and walk into a village. Here, that's not happening. For the Army students, they can drive across to Shorbach, where the 215th Corps is. But we don't really let them. We tried to keep them because they come back with contraband and things, so we keep them in the academy, and we bring a store, a PX to them, and we let, on holidays, we let them play music and things. It's certainly not Marine Corps boot camp style whatsoever. They don't respond to, it would be nearly impossible to have them behave like your basic, your typical Marine recruit at Parris Island. Not a chance. They don't respond to that. So you get all sorts of things. If you push them too hard, I would say about twice a class minimum, they quit. And that's where, like, literally, they will quit. They'll throw their rifles in a pile and say, we're done. We don't like this instructor. And it's not, it's normally an Afghan instructor because he's too hard on them. They won't ever say really things bad about Marines. But the frustration is there, and that's where these young Marines, the patience they have to deal with these guys on a day-to-day basis and to push them through. So, yes, there's many challenges, and it's intense for a young Afghan out of a village, not so much for a Marine recruit going to Parris Island in San Diego.
I guess the comparisons between Parris Island and the JSAS, first of all, nobody pass a drug test in JSAS. You still have problems with people pulling out a doobie and lighting up, or has that been kind of restrained at this point?
That was one of the things. If you let them leave, they come back with drugs. We do drug test them. There's different. The big things is opium. Yeah, it is an addictive substance. That's, you're kicked out. But once you're here, if you get caught with any drugs, you get kicked out. Ever since we stopped letting them leave the camp over to the Army base, to our knowledge, no drug problems. But down here in Helmand Province, it grows everywhere, marijuana and poppy plants. So it's a big issue, and that something needs to be addressed within this country as well as the drug problem, especially down in the South.
Okay. Your predecessors were trying to make coming out of the JSAS program a point of pride, so that if somebody did get kicked out, it was a part of it. It was kind of like an issue of shame. Are you able to continue that? Were they successful in that?
You mean like shaming the individual?
Well, yeah. Is this, you know, when you come out, if you wash out of boot camp, that's not a plus. So you work real hard, and in Afghanistan, it's even better because that way you don't want to bring shame to your village and to your family.
Yeah, and we try to use every angle we can to test someone's pride or manhood, and it works most of the time. If you start threatening, you know, we're going to tell your mullah, we're going to tell your father, your village elder, it works in some cases. Sometimes you just can't get through to them. But in the Army's helping out a lot. You know, we do kick students out for a variety of reasons, you know, for being violent, we sent a EDP recruit home today because he just refused to train. We kept him here for a week and just wouldn't do anything. We finally just, okay, it's your time to go. I tried every trick I could about, shaming him, like you said. So it didn't work with him, but it does work with some. It is a pride thing, and money's a motivational thing too. They're getting paid now.
Okay. Well, what are they getting? When I was there was a major issue where I think ISAF had about 8,000 people off the books because they hadn't gotten around to putting them on, and the Marines were flying up to Kabul bringing back cash to get people paid. Has that issue been resolved?
Yeah, for the most part, it is. A lot of them now, believe it or not, are on direct deposit. Occasionally, we'll have somebody come up, a paymaster from a province or from a district, and actually pay him cash. But the majority is direct deposit to the Bank of Kabul.
Okay.
Kabul.
Well, I mean, but remember, they weren't in the system. If you're not in the system, you can't get paid with the direct deposit.
Yeah, and a lot of that's being corrected.
Okay.
And that leads to a lot of corruption, too, if you don't have direct deposit, and who knows that money's going, and they don't know how much you're getting. And so, yeah, it's a pretty big issue.
Of course, then you get
to my knowledge. Okay, what's that, Andrew?
I was going to say, then, of course, you've got to teach them numbers and what an ATM card is, so overall, but it's still a better system than giving them cash, there's no doubt.
Yeah, it is. And from I haven't heard too many more complaints. We do bring them to the bank. So they go to the bank. And they're all going to the bank right now because they want to send money home for Eid, which is coming up next week.
Right. Okay. Great, Colonel, we're running out of time here. What do you want to close with? What do you want to tell us about the Marines and your program for the Leatherneck audience?
Okay, well, I guess what I'd like to give credit to the young sergeants and corporals, staff sergeants, young Marines that every day first just deal with training Afghans. It's, you know, short of combat is one of the most important jobs over here. It's not the most important job, short of combat. You know, training the Afghan forces to be able to take over security of the country. And it's not an easy job. It is a 24/7 job every day dealing with them. And they can be very difficult. They can be violent. They can be violent, hostile, just rude. But then they can be, you know, and it is rewarding at times. So it's a challenge every day. Something new comes up, and you have to deal with the language. You have to deal with the cultural aspects, the religion. And our young Marines have shown incredible, incredible patience. I'm impressed by it. I'm in awe by them, that they, you know, they can keep their cool through some very trying times. And a lot of our young Marines, yeah, would they like to be out fighting with a battalion? Sure. But their mission is to train Afghans, so that's what they're doing. And that's the message I want to send, you know, whoever reads this magazine, is that, you know, why is this a good program? It's because of the Marines. You've been to JSAS compound. There's nothing there. It's just tents. We don't need million-dollar buildings to produce a quality product. It's, you know, what the Marine Corps does. So that's the only message I got.
Okay, great. Then thank you very much. This is Andrew Lubman from Leatherneck Magazine. We've been talking with Lieutenant Colonel Marcus Williams, Commanding Officer of the JSAS, Joint Security Academy Southwest at Camp Leatherneck. Colonel, thank you for the time, and best of luck to you.
Andrew, thank you.